So you're over to the hands of Preston Montford team for the rest of the day. Just the very thought of that seems to have mean two people have left the room instantly. So I'll give them a couple of minutes to come back and just tell you a little bit about myself. Is that all right? Will it survive? It's a huge spike. Right. My pocket is not good for them. Right. Okay. We'll put it somewhere else. In that one, right the way down. I promise I'll be more careful. I won't sit down. Okay, this is me. I'm Sue, and I have been at this centre since 1994, so I'm feeling older by the day. And what I'm going to do is give you an overview of how this centre fits into the FSC, how we have some new projects, and Pete's is one exciting new project that's helped us to get people more involved locally. And Jenny will tell you a little bit more about the practical activities that the centre does to help inspire children. So that's what we're going to be doing in the course of the morning. When he said 1 minute, do we know where he went? Do we know where he went when he said 1 minute? Oh, camera. Okay. Okay, while we're just waiting, is my voice the right speed for you? Okay, too slow? Too fast? Okay, you want slower? Okay, right then. And you think I'm academic? Yes! Okay. Thank you. I like to be thought of as an academic site. That has made my day. Thank you very much. There was an academic barman, didn't you know? Okay, so moving swiftly on, I wanted to start with this image. And this image was taken, we think, in about 1820. And this is typical of FSC centres. You probably have heard from Rob Lucas and from other people that this organisation has grown a little bit chaotically. And we've managed to find property that's cheap, available, around the country. And this is how our house started in 1820. So it was a private house owned by, we think, the parents of the two people in the middle here who are getting married. Okay, so that's where Preston Montford started out. And this is what we know about it. I wouldn't take notes because it's rather esoteric, a little bit individual, but the house was bought, or the land was bought, in the early 1700s, and we think it was completed in about 1720. A series of different local people bought it, and these people are quite significant. The Wingfields in 1829, those people bought so much land around here, and that's typical England. There was a big landowner who managed the whole, what we call the estate, around. He sold this little bit of it in 1925 to somebody called Arnold Boyce Smith, who wasn't very famous, and I can't tell you very much about him. But in 1947, the key word in here is police, and they bought it to use it as a low security prison, basically. It was what we called remand homes. So that's what it was. So the whole site was owned by the government as a low security prison, which is rather typical of the really different sorts of property we have. And in 1957, this organisation bought just that house there. So just that main house. Okay, so that's what happened in 1957, and since then we have developed. Does that make sense as the starting point for here? Moving on, you can... Yeah?
The Wake Fort, isn't that the crossing of the river?
Yes, it is. Not unless you want to drown, no. But there was a bridge at that end. We think there was never a ford just here, although there was a ford about 4 miles upriver in that direction. So it probably is where it came from. Preston means priests, as in priests, ton, which is a hill, and there's a small hill on that side, and it's the site of an old monastery, but there's nothing left at all. So it's a bit of a mystery. Ford is, the river may have changed course, there may have been other bits that we don't know about the past history, but Preston we know. Ah, perhaps, yes. Okay, so this is the house as it looks today. And we opened it, as I was telling you, in 1957. And the new building over there was added in the 1970s. And the one here that you're staying in was put up in the 1990s. And we now have approximately 120 beds. I say approximately because it depends on the breakdowns of boys and girls and who's prepared to share. But we can usually accommodate about 120 people. We have 6 classrooms. And as you'll see this morning, and you saw with Kaz, a few teaching sites in the grounds as well. We have over 5,000 people visit us in any one year just at this site. So we're quite busy in terms of turnover. Does that make sense? Okay, I think you know some of this, so apologies if it's duplicating. But if you magnify that across the FSC in our 17 centres across the UK countries, we have 14 which are like us. They're residential with children that come here and stay overnight, just like you've seen at breakfast. But we also have day centres. We have over 90,000 people who come through our doors every year across the whole organisation. And that's a lot in day centres as well as just here. And we also try to raise the profile of ourselves and environmental education through lobbying, publications and projects as well. So we don't just operate out of centres, we try to have a government platform as well and influence nationally. Does that make sense? I think you probably picked up some of that from Rob when he gave his talk on the first day about the development of the organisation. He probably told you that's our first centre. Did you recognise that one? That one's our Flatford Mill, that's it, yeah. And it's in Colchester, and that's southern England. And it's where John Constable, the famous landscape painter, had a lot of his early years. We started because of this perceived need to get young people into the natural environment, and that's what you'll be doing some of this morning, and a chance to have hands-on and do the real thing. It really started because there was a chance meeting between two individuals, just like can happen on any FSC course, and it was two people thinking about how to do this, and one person owned or managed Flatford Mill, and one person worked in the school service. And they got their heads together and decided the best way forward was to start field centres, which is what they did. And you've probably seen that map. You've seen that map or something similar, so you know where we all are. So the furthest north is right up in Scotland at the top of the board there, and the furthest south is in an English county called Devon. It's Slapton Lee, right down south there. And a little cluster around London, where it's still one of the largest centres of population in the UK. And you'll notice that some of our problem areas, if you like, are that we've got very little influence down the east of the country because the opportunity hasn't arisen. Not because we don't want to, but we've had to buy our property where we could afford it, and the opportunity just hasn't arisen in the east of the country. I hope you by now know what we do. We provide courses, and these school children that you see here today, these A-level school children, are doing their geography work, and they're doing work that's directly relevant to their examination, and that's what a lot of our A-level students do. So they come here as a sort of add-on to school to bring some of their subject to life, and that's the main reason to come. That here is about 20 to 25% of our customers in any one year. But we have about 25% universities. They are mostly taught by their own staff. We might assist on providing sites and doing some of the logistics. And in a couple of courses, we actually teach, but it mostly their own staff. We have countryside professionals. In the UK, there are a lot of people who work in the natural environment. They might work for county councils, they might manage land, they might assess the biodiversity of a site, and they need training. So we have countryside professionals that come to us for a whole series of courses. And in the UK, we have this strange group of people called leisure learners. Have you heard that phrase before? I don't know about your countries and what you do, but some people learn for pleasure. So they might go and paint, or they might sew, or they might walk. And as long as it has an environmental theme, so we can open their eyes to something within the environment, so they'll be painting landscapes and interpreting that, then that too is within our charitable objectives. So we get in any way we can. So that's the sort of work we do here. And here at Preston Montford, that's mostly 20% as well. And the rest is little children. So we have little children as well, about age 11 and upwards. This is where you're staying. So I hope it looks familiar by now. So you've actually stayed here in our Darwin building, named after Shrewsbury's famous son. We are very close to head office, which is one of the good reasons for running a course like this here, so you can see the network of field centres that we have available to us. And this is who stays here. And one of the groups I didn't mention was the teaching profession, because teachers come on courses here as well. They may be in training, so they may be at a university themselves, or they may come as part of their continuous development within their jobs. A few images for you, because we don't just stay on site. We sometimes go to the north of the county, and this is a lake where people are doing vegetation succession for biology A level. The geographers sometimes, like the group here, are spending a lot of their time in the urban context, because how humans relate to the urban environment is also an important part of their studies. But sometimes they get out into the natural environment and examine the formation in our local hills, for example. And that site is about 3/4 of an hour's drive away. So it's quite a way to go, but it gets us that contrasting scenery. This is a typical February shot where people are out getting cold and wet, but still enjoying themselves. And they're measuring river flow, and that will be for geography. Or a nice summer shot for biologists looking at how heather moorland is regenerating. Heather, this plant here, Calluna vulgaris, is one of the plants that dominate the British uplands, and the management of that heather is an important factor. And this is a group of countryside professionals. But we do have a lot of young children on site. So these are age either 10 or 11, and they're doing a problem solving activity around in the grounds, looking at map work and orienteering. They might do some fun and games and review those and how they relate to each other through team building. And then we might take them back, and you'll see a site almost like this today in Shrewsbury, because the river level is rising, so we can actually use case studies of our local environmental problems. And the floodgates at Shrewsbury are relatively recent. It was 2 years ago. Yeah, 2 years ago. And here we have a shot of them in action. We have other customer groups. You know we have overseas groups, you're here. We have university and college groups, professionals, leisure learning, and government agency courses as well. So our government has two or three environmental bodies that help to manage our landscape. One of them's called the Environment Agency. One of them's called Natural England. And these are organisations that often use us as a training venue as well. So just a few shots of what we might do. These are leisure learners on the left-hand side, learning about willow and how to weave willow into wonderful different sorts of furniture. And this is a slightly more academic course, looking at fungal identification. We might do something on soil science, on botany, and that's a common adult theme to take people out and study, in this case, mosses or bryophytes, and looking at those. And taking them back and looking at them under a microscope is also quite an important part. And this shot is this room set up as a laboratory, because we do have to multi-use all our rooms. So it's a workroom now. We could get the tables out, string out loads of microscopes, etc., and turn it into a laboratory. So we have to make best use of those facilities. We may take them out to geology sites, and often if we haven't got the expertise ourselves within our own staff, we'll buy somebody in to deliver a geology course. And we have some very nice local sites to examine a range of different skills. These people are doing surveying, but they are also a wonderful site for doing aquatic plants and fish biology. So you can do many things at the same site. A lot of what we do is displayed possibly on the backboard better than I can explain it myself, and that's that we produce a wide range of publications. We've covered everything from identification for primary school children through to quite detailed work for adults and things to make people started. And the publication on the right-hand side was actually written by Pete, which was to get people started on understanding the natural history of a local area. So we do quite a lot on identification and publication. We have this project that you may have heard of called the Aids to Identification in Difficult Groups of Animals and Plants. At the moment, it's mostly UK, but there have been examples of where they've translated into other languages and been developed in other countries with different sets of species, particularly for water quality monitoring, where it's been used in Southeast Asia extensively. So there is a lot of work on the production of publications. And there are, like I say, three different levels. So the publication on the left is pretty accessible to beginners. In the middle, you may have had to have a little bit more skill. And by the right-hand side, that book on woodlice is about that fat and tells you everything you want to know about woodlice and perhaps a lot you don't want to know, but that's the range that we do. Some of our biological recording training is done in partnership with a local university, and our nearest large university is the University of Birmingham. And we have a partnership that delivers academic qualifications through identification at certificate and master's level. And at this centre, I run about 25 courses a year that are accredited by that university. And it helps to improve national ID skills. That qualification has been going now for 11 years, and the government agencies are now recognising it as an important national skill. We do try to develop partnerships, I'm sorry, that's spelt wrong, groups at the centre, so we try to forge local links. We have a local bat group, we have a local botanical society, we've got an ornithological society. My office doubles for this society's library, so the whole of one side of my office is full of moss books. So we try to forge those links to support organisations that don't have central funding, so we can help them. We've also piloted a new field skills qualification, so we can test people in their identification skills. And we provide local support for local groups. So it could be anything that wants us, basically. If we can help a community group, we're in a position to do so, then we've led brownie groups and scout groups, which are junior activity based places. And we may be able to provide a tutor or just a resource. So we see what people want. Go on. Sex. Brownies are usually female and scouts are usually male. You do actually get sometimes there are such things as brownies that have gone to scouts. That's why I said usually. But usually brownies are little girls and cubs and scouts are little boys. Okay. This really is Pete. So this is a local project, and it's a local project that's around this region. It's not just Shropshire, it's a little bit further than that, but what we're trying to do is to help people to understand more about identification. All the initiatives I told you about before, I have to charge people for coming through these doors. We're a charity, but we don't get central funding, so we have to run the organisation as a business. So everybody who comes through, with the exception of some community groups, pay me or the centre something for being here. This is wonderful because it's funded by the lottery, which means Pete can make sure that there's some quality control on who comes, so we don't make sure that they actually really are going to be useful to us and train us up to help to make sure that they can provide biological records for the whole area. But they don't have to pay. which is a really big step forward, because everything else I've told you about, people have to pay. But this is a funded project, and it's funded by the National Lottery and Heritage Lottery funding. So that is a UK-based funding, and well, I'll leave Pete to tell you a little bit more about that rather than tread on his toes, but it's quite an exciting partnership to run from this centre.
Another private practice?
Can you repeat that?
Don't you depend on another kind of private partnerships, not only national lottery, but another private persons or companies?
No private funds. No private funds at all. It's entirely funded by what we charge. So, no. I think there may have been one project that was funded privately, but I'm going back a long time. So no, it's all basically either a government-funded project. For example, we have a school group coming in 2 weeks' time that the government have paid for them to come here. But most of the time, it's the schools and parents and individuals or companies that pay. So companies might pay for an employee to come, but no. So everything you see is funded by being a business rather than any donations or funding, with the exception of this man here. So. You're going to wander around the estate shortly, and that's why we're going to get you some Wellingtons and some waterproofs. You won't do all of it because there are 9 hectares altogether, so we won't do it all before 11:30. We will have a look at the River Severn. We will possibly look at one of the ponds, but not all of them. But we'll look at a woodland, grassland, meadow habitats, which are the most common habitats around this area of Shropshire. And there are other wildlife areas. We have log piles, we have bird boxes, and we do have a particular interest in some particular animals. And particularly we have a moth trap as well, which Pete is going to talk about as well, because we have actually got a site where we look at invertebrates, moths especially, that come across the site. We have a sensory garden and a willow classroom, which is out in that direction. And that was built from this Richards project, actually, because they did a joint funded project. So we did get some funding for this one to actually build and design the project with help from a local school children that had physical disabilities. Just a bit about how we manage the site. We do have our own sewage system on site, and we do treat our wastewater mostly through willows and a reed bed system. So we do try our best to live as environmentally sensitively as we can. And that's one example. And the willow itself, we've harvested 4 times since I've worked here, and usually use the harvest to bulk up the banks, or in a couple of occasions we've swapped it, so we've done some local barter for people who wanted the willow, but most of the time we've used it to manage the site. This is where we're going to go today, and if we're lucky we might see the hills, we'll see. So that's the idea. So we do have some nice views across the estate, but sometimes it looks more like that. And that's because we have a flood problem here in Shrewsbury. We do have some hills in the south of the county, and those hills are quite dramatic. And here we have our major river, which is the biggest river in the UK, the River Severn, going past a hill called the Wrekin. Some people come to us because of our historic sites. And this is a Norman chapel in the south of the county. So some people come to us not for traditional environmentalism, but archaeology and history linked with conservation in the landscape. And I'd like to end on that note, because you must know it's his 200th birthday, and you must have heard of this chap. And he was actually born in Shrewsbury. So that's one of the reasons that people came to Shrewsbury originally. But I suspect we're making more of him now than we ever have. And in the last 200 years, Shrewsbury's had one statue to Darwin. But now we're getting a bit better, and Jenny's helped to get a bit better because she was part of the author team on The Curious Mind of Young Darwin over there, which is also part of his 200th birthday celebrations, which is one of the FSC publications. But I think we should have been a lot more proud of Darwin a long time ago, but at least we're making the most of it now. So that's a little bit of a 20-minute overview of Preston Montford and how it fits into the FSC. Has anybody got any questions, thoughts, comments, or have you managed to ask them as we've gone along? Okay, well now I think it's time to go out and about. The weather's not too bad. So what I suggest we do is firstly get ourselves some wellies